Hey, everybody, welcome to The Afterword. I'm Dave Tisch. You know, we have been in this series on gender and sexuality and the body called Wonderfully Made, and we have talked about all manner of things. And today, I'm very excited because we are going to be talking about a particular edge to this topic, which often gets ignored, which is the edge for single folks. At Westgate, there's a huge percentage of our population that's single, both young adults and college kids, but also mid to late 30s, 40s, 50s, people in all age demographics who are single. And this topic hits different. It just does. So I'm here with Nasim Khalili, who is a local pastor here in the Bay Area. Well, at least she's a local pastor for at least a few more days. She's actually moving to Portland on Monday. So Portland's gain, San Jose's loss. She works at Awakening Church, and she has for a number of years. She's here to talk about the intersection of what it means to be single and sexuality. And so we're going to dive into that. And I think that this conversation is going to be a benefit not just to folks who are single, but everyone. I know I was deeply moved by it. So I think you're really going to love it. Our conversation was so much fun. So with that, let's just dive right in.
We could do another podcast.
How has your name been mispronounced?
Oh my gosh. Nasim. It's usually been Nasim because people...
Sure, it's kind of phonetic. N-A-S-E-E-M.
Yeah. And I think the light A, I don't think Americans are used to, like in English language, that lighter A.
So they think Nasim?
Yeah. I've gotten Nasim. I've gotten Nasim. Nasim.
Like NASA.
Yeah.
NASA.
But a friend of mine came up with the NASA acronym.
That's good.
That works.
Yeah. Like NASA.
Yeah.
NASA. There it is.
Yes.
Well, my last name is spelled T-I-E-C-H-E. So it's Tai Chi. I don't know why you think it's Tai Chi.
I know.
Do
you correct people?
Yes. Yeah. Now I do. I correct them with like a real aggressive tone. That's what
I'm trying to get more confident about correcting, but like, I don't know. Sometimes even as a girl, I feel like it's hard to.
Yeah.
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 I'm like, am I allowed to?
Yeah, you are. You are. It's your name. Yeah. It's important. You're trying to get it right. Nasim.
Yes.
Nasim Khalili.
There we go.
Nasim.
Yes.
So glad to have you here. Okay, so talk to me. Did you grow up in the Bay?
I did. I'm from the Bay, born and raised.
So you've been pastoring for how long?
I was on staff at Awakening Church for, this would be 8 years.
Eight years.
I left in August. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
And I was commissioned as a pastor January 2022.
Oh,
yeah,
wow.
2.5 years. Yeah.
Yeah. That's so cool.
Yeah. So kind of operating all different types of ministry roles.
Sure. But now you're moving up to Portland.
Yeah.
So it feels like the Bay Area is losing.
I know.
And our loss is Portland's gain, I suppose.
I'm like, I know. No. So. Yeah. It kind of felt like this, the way I kept describing it a year ago too, was an itch for change. Like
sure.
An itch for change city-wise, just also for me personally.
Sure.
Just kind of being in my 30s, being single, like wanting what's next. And kind of feeling like there was another assignment.
That's exciting.
God's like, yeah,
I love that.
Let's do it. Yeah.
Okay. So before we get into it, just so the people kind of know you, I'm going to ask you just a get to know you question. Mm-hmm. So you're in high school. What's your jam?
Yes.
What is playing on repeat?
Oh my gosh.
What's your jam?
Yeah. Okay. High school. So that would be like summer of 05, 06.
Mm-hmm.
I loved, oh my gosh. I mean, I was a big Ashley Simpson fan.
Oh,
at the time.
Wow. That is not where I expected us to go.
What did you think?
I don't know. It just, I didn't expect Ashley Simpson. I didn't expect Ashley Simpson.
I love Nelly Furtado.
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
She's like a bird. She wants to fly away.
Yes.
Yeah.
Postal Service. I was kind of all over.
Oh, you're kind of all over the place.
And I really did love Christian rock and pop. That was like a big era. Remember like just Super Chick and
I
was into Zoe Girl.
Well, then it all went away and now it's just worship music.
I know.
And it kind of irritates me if I'm frank. Because there used to be a subculture of actual artists writing songs that were like about more than, you know,
Didn't Switchfoot kind of have their moment? Moment, though, at that time too.
Huge. Well, yeah. Switchfoot was before that. It was 98. They were huge.
Okay.
And they went giant with but they were huge.
Yeah.
Switchfoot was.
They were featured on One Tree Hill, like shows.
And they were really good. They were a really excellent band.
Yeah. Wait,
again, but no song from Switchfoot's a worship song you can sing in church.
I know.
Which I'm fine with. It's like, why can't we have that back?
Meant to Live. Do you think Meant to Live kind of?
Maybe, but that'd be weird.
I
think
I was on like a Mexico mission trip and that we sang that.
Well, I think I sing it as a worship song in my car.
Yeah.
Absolutely. All right. And then also another question. Thank you for that.
I love it.
A movie that not just you like or think is good, but like we're talking impacted you. Like,
oh, impact. Oh,
you know what I mean? Because that doesn't always mean your favorite.
Yes.
Like the Ballad of Ricky Bobby, Talladega Nights might be one of my favorites, but there's no way that I actually. Right.
Do you
like,
mean a movie just in my whole life or
in your
that
whole
era?
Life? In your
oh,
whole
my whole
life.
Okay, so
your
okay,
whole life. Anywhere, anytime.
Okay, yeah, this is gonna either get a lot of hate or a lot of love.
Oh,
yeah. The movie Crash, which won Best Picture? Your face. Yeah.
No, it's just controversial.
I know
choice.
It's probably like in my top five movies of life.
Okay, so talk to me about why.
Because
it's a collision of a whole bunch of different people.
I love a collision,
and
of
some
stories.
Of them are pretty ugly. Yeah. But you see behind the scenes that they're more complex than they are,
and they're all connected some way.
Yes, they are.
Yeah, and just I don't know. I think at the very end, it's like such a it's the human condition, right? I think it's ludicrous. At the end, he's like, "We all just need to crash into each other just to feel something." Mm. And I'm like, on a spiritual sense, I think that's true.
Yeah.
You know, like we are meant to know one another, right? That knowingness. Yeah. So that movie, I think I was 16 at the time it came out, maybe younger. It impacted me. I mean, to this day, I'm like remembering quotes from it. You know, so I think it deserved to win Best Picture. That's my hot take.
The part that I remember is the dad's speech to his little girl about the bulletproof.
I know.
Oh my
God,
goodness.
I know.
That was so.
Yeah. Well, and there was an Iranian family in that being Persian.
Yes,
I was like, we're being represented kind of in a bad way, but you know, that was powerful.
That's the thing. It wasn't in a bad way. It was in a bad and a good way. They showed both kind of sides to every character.
Yes.
You saw them kind of at their ugliest and also at their messy, beautifulist.
Exactly.
And so you saw kind of both.
Yeah. Yeah.
And just saw how not talking to each other, not knowing each other results in division.
Totally. I love that you remember it all too. Good.
No, it's a fantastic film.
I know.
Well, like you said, it won Best Picture.
Yeah.
Is that like 2000, 2001 or something?
In my head, it's like 05. Maybe I'm totally wrong.
I could.
Can we look it up?
Yeah. What year did Crash win Best Picture? I'm asking Siri. Oh, 05. You're right. I'm completely wrong. Completely wrong. Okay. We're not here to talk about that, though. I do appreciate that. We're here to talk about, we're in our Wonderfully Made series, and you were good enough to come and share a little bit about the perspective as a person who's single around this issue, this topic. We have a ton of people who are single.
Yeah.
I'm in a life group at South Hills. We've got 1, 2, 3, 4 people who are single in that. And so there's a sense, we were talking last night just about what's going on and how they experience things. And one of the young women was like, "Oh, I have thoughts." And then she, I was like, "Get it." And it was great. And it was such an interesting perspective. But talk to me about, before we enter into this conversation, I'd love to hear a little bit about, often singles aren't consulted, and sometimes even in church, singles are overlooked or their perspective. A lot of times the people giving the messages are married or they have been married for a while. That's just kind of the way things kind of go. So how have you seen singles be overlooked when it comes to, I guess, this topic in particular? Because it does seem like it's a different conversation or slightly different.
Yeah. I mean, so I know I kind of go back and forth with this because on the one hand, I think, yes, absolutely. There's been an overlookedness. I was actually just listening to Carrie Newhoff's leadership podcast. I'm sure many of your listeners know him. And he had someone on there and she, Annie F. Downs, and she was saying the statistic where they had surveyed 700 singles in the church and 65% of them said, "We don't feel seen or cared for by our church as a group of singles." I'm like, wow, 65%. That's crazy.
That's a lot.
Yeah. So as she was talking about it more, I agree with that. I also then my other like, generous explanation, other side of me that is like, what's the other side is I also wonder like, are there a lot of singles in ministry? I don't know who can speak to that. Cause to your point, we were talking yesterday, like maybe a lot of pastors are married men that are older, right? Mm-hmm. So I don't know if they're even like in ministry, like how many single women pastors do we know? Single men pastors? I don't know that many. I can list them on one hand.
Yeah.
So could it also be that the lack of representation to speak to it? I don't know.
We were talking in our group and I was asking our group, I said, you know, do you feel seen? Do you feel cared for? Do you feel? And one of the women said, well, singles are a cagey bunch because if you think about it, being single in your 20s is very different than single in your 30s, very different than singles in your 50s.
Yeah.
So like what's being asked, what they want. And she's like, also it's the Bay Area. People just don't commit, you know,
totally.
And unless there's like some sort of deep relationship. So she's like, don't just throw an event and ask singles to come. Cause it's like, that's the last thing we want.
Oh
we don't want to network with weird people that we don't know. And so there's a sense there of which the, I mean, I think about, I did youth ministry for years. Mm-hmm. You treat and minister to seventh graders very different than juniors in high school. They just have different needs.
Sure.
So maybe the singles demographics themselves are pretty complex and I'm not saying tough to crack, but more nuanced than a single monolithic group.
Absolutely.
Does that make sense?
Yes. Even like a singles group for like college and young 20s.
Completely different.
That ministry is so different than me and a 34-year-old. Yeah.
100%.
Yeah.
That's like, hey, you want to come over and play, you know, games.
Yes.
You don't say that to a 32-year-old. Totally. You want to come play Settlers of Catan. Yeah. They're like, what are you talking about?
Right. I don't know if I can speak for all of us, but I'm like, just do a speed dating event. We'll come to that. We know what we want. Like, I would just come to that. Like, give us 5-10 minutes with each guy and I'll leave with a few numbers. Wow. Like, let's just do that.
Well, hey.
I don't know.
I also think trivia nights at the bar are super fun.
So fun.
I'll do that all day.
Me too.
I guess the general rule is if you would do it.
That's true.
Right? Whether why not do it?
Yeah. Subjective. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So how can we, but on this topic of sexuality and this topic of what does it mean to, understand our sexuality. What are the unique challenges you think that single folks face that maybe either married folks don't face or that are a particular challenge for singles?
Yeah, that's good. I think one of the things that comes to mind is the older we get too, there's a sense of like being, and I kind of touched on this in the message too, but I wish I could talk more about it, like being left behind in a way. Like me at 34 now, I've kind of like gone past the phase of like in your 20s, all your friends getting married. I remember being a bridesmaid like 7-8 times. Sure. Right. But then
terrible dresses.
Yes. Often, all of that. A lot of often. Money, a lot of your savings goes to that.
True.
Right.
That's true.
But like all jokes aside, then when you hit your 30s, then it's like, then you're becoming like, I can list my single friends. Like, I mean, I think I have like two right now that I consider really close friends in our 30s that are single, right?
So because
everyone's got married and then everyone started to have their kids. So like my best friend right now has an 8-year-old, you know, and we grew up in church together. We've been friends since we were 10 years old, but she has an 8-year-old. And I'm still single. So there's a sense of like, am I left behind? Meaning has everyone moved on with like, they're in the phase of like home ownership and, you know, like kids sports and all that. I'm here like, you know, what cocktail bar are we going to for trivia, you know? So it's just like a different, and to that, like, I still feel like I am living a really, really full life, which is great. But there is a sense, I think singles feel like, but where is my person? You know, like I had another friend that we were chatting and she's so wise. She's 23. So we're 10 years apart, but she was telling me, she's like, I and my friend group feel this sense of like, I don't feel known. Like I'm sitting at a game night with all couples and it's just me. So kind of like that seventh wheel kind of feeling. And everyone's like sitting there and they know this and that about each other. And I don't feel like I'm as known, you know? So that feeling of like left behindness, I wonder if married people don't experience it as much or maybe aren't even aware that we go through that, you know?
Are there ways that folks can ease that or break down that feeling? Because the feeling of not being known or not being seen, like you said, 65% of singles don't feel seen.
Yeah.
That is a terrible feeling. I don't care who you are.
Yeah,
I don't care what age you're at. The feeling of not being seen is terrible. Are there things that folks have done that have made you feel more included and folded in, loved, invited, cherished,
totally.
That kind of thing?
Yeah, I feel like I do feel so blessed that my married friends have always made me feel included. Like, you know, many of them, you know that feeling, I'm sure you're like this too, Dave, where like you kind of like when you, what's an example? Like when you're in a group and you kind of overhear someone mentioning you to someone else, like let's say you and a friend are talking and I overhear you say like, oh yeah, Nassim loves that. You know, she loves that movie. And you kind of overhear and there's that sense of like, they know me.
Yeah.
To me, that's like one of my love languages where I'm like, I feel like my people know me. Like I overhear them saying like, Nassim loves that. That's so Nassim.
That's so cool.
And I feel like in my community, I do have that sense of knownness. Obviously not to an extent of like, I would hope my person, I want to meet that in my husband too, right? I want to experience that with him. But I do feel like that breadth of like God's love and intimacy, I feel that with my community. I do.
Yeah.
So that's helpful. So, and that's something I hoped I touched on in the message too, is like join in, because Westgate has that, you know, like join in the body of Christ.
Yeah.
You will find that. It's hard, but you will find that, you know?
So is it about, do you feel like just being for folks out there who have friends who are single, just the invitation, like I've got a buddy, I've got my days are Friday off.
Yeah.
And so I'm like, dude, like you want to go see a movie? Oh, and he's like, yeah. So we went to see Dune together.
Cool.
And it was like, we spent like 4 hours talking about it afterwards. And it was like this thing because he doesn't have a movie partner.
Well, I love
and I'm like, yeah. I'm like, well, and I love, he's just so smart. Ryan, if you're listening, you're my favorite. And so we go out there and we it's that kind of stuff.
It's so cool.
Like, and that's a, and it's super rich.
Yeah.
Cause his experience obviously, you know, is slightly different, but also not.
Yes.
You know, so there's
I'm curious, what made you want to pursue him? Because
he's awesome. We're just good friends.
I guess that's not surprising, but I think it's cool. Like sometimes you think married people just have space only for married people.
Yeah.
Especially like guys. I don't know. So it's so cool to me to hear you say like you going out and pursuing him, you know?
Well, I do think that there is a thing. I think once you get married and have kids, the crunch time does happen. And you've seen this, like there's a withdrawal and some of it's natural, but I think what it does is it results in tremendous loneliness. Even for married folk, they're alone in the tasks.
Yeah.
And so many times moms will say things like, young moms will say, I have no adult conversation. You know, they're dying on the vine and they need this. Or, you know, once you dads will be like, all I do is work and then go home and I don't really have this. So there's loneliness across the board, I think, in some ways. So I think that there's a sense in which that's abated when, you know, whenever people get together.
It's so true.
Let's talk about this too also, because you touched on this and it's delicate and it's painful. And that's the sense, and you even alluded to it here, the sense that life is maybe you're not progressing or that life is moving you beyond you or that you're missing something, is the sense of disappointment with God.
Yeah.
Or the sense that maybe God has answered everybody else's prayer, but not yours.
Yes.
And that's fairly universal, but the need, you know, whenever somebody gets passed over for a job or that thing doesn't happen in their career or that thing doesn't happen, those are all things that are, but this feels pretty like deeper. Is that fair to say that this is deeper, deeper disappointment?
I feel that. Yeah. And I can't speak to, obviously there's no, I can't speak to like someone who's married and wanting to have kids and struggling with infertility. I'm sure that feels deeper.
Oh so, yeah. I guess that would be very similar.
Yes. You know,
the
right?
sense of disappointment.
Yes.
Like everyone else is doing this, but I'm not, I can't, it's not happening.
Totally.
For me. Yes. So is there a sense in which you feel like maybe God doesn't, there's a sense of like spiritual, like fear that maybe God isn't listening or has lost your number or.
Yeah. Oh my, that's such a good, it's so funny that you said they lost your number. I told a friend maybe 6-7 months ago, I was like, sometimes I feel like with this prayer request, it's exactly the illustration of like, God, I know God's picking up the phone. Cause like, I know he's not distant from me. Right. But I feel like I just hear static on the end.
Yeah.
And I so badly want God to tell me something. Like it's so cool because sometimes I listen to people like Rita Springer, someone I respect so much, 90s worship leader, but she's in her 50s and single. And she, I mean, her story is she's like, God told me I will be married. So when I hear her, I'm like, wow, I love that confidence. I can't sit here and say like, God audibly told me I will. There's things in my life that have like kind of confirmed, like I'm pretty confident, like he will bring him. And I think I am called to be a mom. I'm called to be a wife, all that, but I'm not sitting here being like, I'm entitled to this and he has to answer. So sometimes in my prayer time, that illustration of like feeling static, I'm just like, God, I can't hear what you're saying. And it just feels like static. So all I'm clinging to is trusting your character, but I don't feel like you're necessarily saying anything to me directly about this. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that is kind of scary. You know what I mean? It's kind of hard. And so all I know to do is persevere, which is why that whole crux of my sermon was all I know, even in that static or silence, is all I know to do is cling to his character that is good. Yeah. And, but the static is still hard, you know?
So there's a tension in that. And this is the tension, I think, in all prayer or maybe all of life. Maybe you can illuminate on this, is the sense that, God, I trust that you're good and what you give me is what you want me to have.
Yep.
And yet there's this thing, this desire that's thwarted, and I don't think it's wrong. Like I've examined, it's not like I'm asking to become a billionaire and get rich off the back of kids in China who are making soccer balls for my company using exploitative labor. This is a spouse. This is a thing you've designed. This is marriage. This is what you, it's not bad. It's not wrong.
Right.
So I trust what you will give me. And yet I've got this desire, which I don't think is wrong.
Yep.
I know it's not wrong.
Yep.
And yet it's being thwarted or it's not happening. How do you help people? How do you process that? And what's a thing that can help folks through that? Because that's a very real experience for so many people.
No, I know. And I told you this before we recorded, and I feel like I need to say it here too. Like, I never, I kind of like run a tension between like, I don't want to be seen as like the token single pastor that has the answers, right? Simultaneously, I feel really, really confident and at peace that God is using this part of my story as my ministry. So
right.
I'm like, I want to talk about it. So right. I'm always like, one of my core values is to be vulnerable and transparent. So I want to, but I guess I want your listeners to also hear, like, I am exactly what you said. I'm in process. And I don't know if I have answers, but I have just where my journey.
Right.
And my journey is all I know I can do is clean. So, okay, because I know that I want to be formed into the image of Christ. That's what we all want to do, right? Like that's part of our sanctification. This part of my journey is also part of my sanctification process, right? So how I choose to actively pursue him and become more like Jesus in this process, I think that's what keeps me going. Is I'm like, okay, Lord, like you tell me to persevere. You tell me to keep going. You tell me to cling to you. I know I'm still going to bear fruit in this season. It's not wasted. So I guess I would encourage people in that tension, like it's not passive waiting. You know, we confidently hope he will answer, but there is activity happening here. There's transformation he's doing here. So I think that like time not being wasted helps me to kind of like have that broader perspective.
Sure.
You know, like, Lord, what are you doing? Like, how are you chiseling me into becoming more like you? You know, and we kind of talked about this a little offline, but like even the series touching on like same-sex attracted people who have like sacrificed that part of their sexuality, you know, and I'm like, wow, like that to me is this example of like true sacrifice here.
You know, yeah.
What?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because that would be for our same-sex attracted friends who are Christian and have submitted that to a celibate life. That means that it's not like, oh, someday God might. It's like off the table for their life.
Yeah.
And that is incredible trust. It also strikes me, and tell me if this is, I've talked a lot about the Psalms of Lament. For some reason, the Psalms of Lament have like really helped me understand kind of what God is okay with.
Yeah.
And the Psalms of Lament always start with an honest assessment of reality.
Yes.
So first you kind of are honest about what's going on, and then you feel all the feelings. And if you don't do those two, now if you just stay there, you're in trouble because you'll go to despair.
Yeah.
But the first two parts of a lament are the honest reality, here's what's actually going on, and then the honest feelings.
Yes.
Then there's a turn to the hope of God. But before that happens, I think we suck at lament in the U.S. Yeah. I think we don't want to feel the feelings. So I imagine there's a lot of platitudes that people try to plaster over you, like, oh, you'll find somebody soon, or girl, the second you stop caring is the second he shows up, or, you know, the Lord is your husband. Let Jesus be your husband. Exactly. Like what they're trying to do is plaster over your pain, and kind of they're dismissive of it. Because they don't want to sit in it with you and it's too painful.
Yeah.
And I think people instinctively know, man, that's hard.
Yeah.
And that's a difficult situation for all of our single listeners out there. That's a real thing.
Yeah.
This is not like plastic.
Yeah.
This is not like, oh, Burger King's not open this morning. Why did I say Burger King?
That's my number one fast food.
Oh my gosh. Starbucks is out of the caramel macchiato syrup. This is not that. No, this is not, this is deeper.
Yeah.
Does that resonate with you or not?
So much, Dave. So much. And I almost, as you said that, I'm like, do you think it's also because we wouldn't know what to do without those? It's almost like we say platitudes because we hope they're true, right? We hope they'll be true. But then I think of like, if there's someone out there that's listening, that's like a single or widowed parent that's in their 50s or 60s and you've heard the millions of platitudes, I don't know, like I see you, like, and that doesn't help, where they're like, who knows, maybe he's not coming. Maybe she's not. And maybe that is just the reality and we suck at the lament, to your point. So and this was kind of one of those cutting room floor thing parts of the sermon where I'm like, I wish there was enough time to just sit and do a mini deep dive on lament.
Yeah.
And like, man, like I've been reading Jay's new book, shameless plug for Jay's new book.
Yeah. But listen, speak.
Go
available April 16th. Wherever books are sold.
But
he would never plug his own book.
I know,
so we're going to have to do it for him. Really helpful.
There's a line in there. I just was reading this yesterday where he says, prayer helps us endure. And that's it. And
completely.
I'm like, man, and so much of my message was perseverance and endurance. So I'm like, that is it. Like, if I didn't have my moments of lament with him, that's been a lifeline. That's been a lifeline to be able to sit with God and just lay it all on the table. And I don't know.
And some days it's probably easier than others.
For sure.
Right.
For sure.
But the ability and the care and also the authenticity. Here's my real life. Mm. Here's what's really painful. And I have to give it to you. Otherwise, it's gonna hurt me in some way. I'm either going to act out in some way, or I'm not going to trust you in some way. I'm going to lash out at other people, or it's going to erode my trust in you.
Yes.
That secretly I'm going to believe that I'm not actually one of your favorites, yeah. that you have yeah. your favorites, and I'm just not one of them.
Right. And you're withholding.
And, yeah. and if I were, maybe if I were better, or if I were different, maybe you would love me enough to give what you give to everybody else. Ugh. And that,
yeah.
that feeling is, I think that can, that destroys and chisels away in our hope.
So true. Yeah. Gosh. Oh, that really, yeah, resonates. Yeah, I know. What comes to mind too is like with lament, you don't need to have all your feelings figured out.
Right.
And I say that as someone who yes. like, I like to kind of pride myself on being pretty emotionally aware, you know, emotionally healthy. Like that's something really valuable to me is like, mm-hmm. I don't know. I hate the term like doing the work, quote unquote, but like I think I'm a pretty emotionally aware person, you know? And like that's a big value of mine. And then there's moments where I feel like I don't know what I'm feeling or why, and you can't really define it. And that mm-hmm. really bothers me.
Yeah.
And one of my closest friends, like a prayer partner to me, we were just talking about this and she's like, Nassim, you don't always need to deal with the emotions either. Just chuck it at the cross. You don't need to know and label it and know what it means and what it doesn't mean. And I feel like in my singleness, it's helped so much because it does feel like a roller coaster. Because there are days where I'm just like, I'm chilling. I'm good. Like if I'm being honest with this move I just had to Portland, like my world has been in like furniture ordering and like living my best main character era energy, you know? but then there's also days where I'm like, oh Lord, like I hope my husband is there. If I'm being honest, like yeah. I hope he's a part of the next chapter. Like, come sure. on Lord, like how much longer?
Which day? It'd be nice to meet him on day two. So after I move in and I'm sweaty, not that day, the next day when things are more together.
Yeah. I hope he lives in my apartment complex.
Ooh, hey. Goes to the church you're working at?
Yes,
yeah, that's exciting.
Yes. Anyways.
That's yeah. exciting. Yeah. Right. Yeah, and there's that. Yeah, I love that. And also I think what I'm totally the same way. I feel like tremendous guilt, like if I'm not completely put together
yeah.
in front of God. So it's like I have to, because you know, it's such a, I don't know if it's the performative side of me or like the Dave, the school student that had to, you know, wanted to impress the teachers with,
yeah.
you know,
yeah.
I just want to, yeah. I want to, or you just can't, you can't be off in front of God. But like yeah. then the idea that he actually takes chaos and yeah. orders it,
yes.
that's what he does.
Yes.
It's okay to bring my chaos and say, yeah. I can't order this. I need you to,
bring order, yeah.
or I got this internal storm. Can you quiet it?
Yeah.
Can you speak to it or help me figure out how to get through that? That was really freeing for me because I didn't think that was permissible.
No, I love what you said. I can't be off in front of God. That's so good. Yeah.
Because that's what I really,
yeah.
you, that's not what you do. You approach, when you approach the king, you best be right.
I
you know?
Know,
you better not be like stumbling over your words and be yeah. like, hey, glad to see you. I don't have anything to say. You got to have a presentation yep. and you know, and yep. it's just like, it's just not relationship.
It's so true. It's, I know. When I wonder as a single, yeah. just going back to that feeling of disappointment and lament too, is like, do we feel like it's okay to be disappointed about that? Like I've ventured into those waters where I'm like, but I'm not entitled to it. So I don't want to act entitled. Like, you know, like sometimes it's kind of like I always want to steer away from prosperity gospel vibes, right? Where it's
sure.
like, I'm not guaranteed it. And then again,
if you just believe,
yes. and but then
you got to believe.
But I also want to hope and really sure. trust that it could.
Yeah.
And like, and God does want to give me my desires because he's a good father. So let me keep asking, keep hoping. But again, I don't think we talk enough about it's a tension that yeah. we walk through and it's a hard tension.
Yeah.
And I'm sure for someone who's longing for a child or like a, I don't know, a wayward child to come home or, you know, to accept Jesus, you know, like
those are all
yeah,
so deep,
yeah.
The deep heart desires that we know to our core aren't off.
Yes.
Like
yes.
Somebody might be like, look, I kind of want this promotion, but let's be honest, it's all wrapped up in my ego and
yeah.
I know that I've got mixed motives, so God just direct me. I'm okay like trusting you with that. This feels different.
Totally.
This is my heart, you
yeah.
know. So this is
yeah.
and that feels
a good desire. Yeah.
Right, right.
Yeah.
So I guess, do you have any general like best practices or things that have helped you or like warnings? Or encouragements, because I think that we can go in a bad way on this too. You know what I mean? I think that
what do you mean by warnings?
I that you're like, avoid this, avoid the, like you use the word entitlement. Or you use the word like,
yeah.
you know, perfunctory or not bring in, even I do like the term doing the work, because I do think doing the work means, I think a lot of times, being quiet enough to actually bring God our real selves. Mm-hmm. And I think That's if we good. Don't do that work, I think it leaks out of us.
It's so true.
I do. Right. I think that not doing the work means that we're unhealthy.
Yeah.
And, yes. and I don't want, I mean, I'm already unhealthy enough. Like, let's not be more of that. If I can do a little bit better with God today, then that's, so I,
so like that.
I think there's a little bit of maybe things that you've learned, like don't and do's, or maybe just do's.
I love that. Something I'm learning and have been learning is the notion of my faith is in a who, not a what. My faith is in a who, not a what, meaning like, even though I'm praying for all the what's, all the desires, which are all, again, good desires, at the end of the day, I am committed to, and my faith is in God's character, not in like, just kind of like I mentioned the sermon, like him being a cosmic vending machine. Let me perform the right way, get the answer to the prayer. And I love Dave Lomas, who I think reality. For sure. Will never forget, if a few years ago he did a sermon about singleness, which it was one of the first sermons I ever heard. Like, some, you know, especially in the Bay Area, they do on singleness, which I loved. But he was saying, what if we started looking at our faith more like this, like it's a commitment or a vow, meaning like I am committed to trusting you, God, no matter if the what's get answered, how they get answered, my faith is a commitment. And just that terminology, I think, just helped, like, that paint a beautiful picture to me of like, yeah, it's not just faith. And like, if you give me this or that, then like my faith goes up and down, right? We're so quick to be like, God is so good, got the answer. But what if we don't get the answer? Is he still good? Like, he is still good. But I think for maybe, especially for us as singles, it's like, how can I, in a very genuine way, still believe he is good, even when I'm not getting the what? And I think that really takes, not to sound basic, it takes really forging a relationship with him to get to know the who. I don't think enough as disciples, we don't really know the who. That's sad, right? We go to church, we hear a sermon. What would you say? You're a pastor.
No, 100%. Yeah. I think that's really convicting. I think we can get wrapped up in all those things that you said, and our faith is in a who. That's a great word. So investing in that, which is not so much the perfunctory doing, but more about being. You know?
And
that sounds cliche, but it's,
I know. And I'd hate to sound, I was like, I don't want to sound, I know.
But it's not cliche, because it's talking about, I mean, he does the stuff, he works, and there is stuff to do. Yeah. We're not saying there's not.
Yeah.
But I just think that there's an internal character formation that is deeper.
There is. I have a friend at our old church. She's just so wise, and she's single, younger than me. And she had mentioned, I wish that singles, she's single, so she's like, this is my prayer, that we would somehow be able to just exude this aroma of being known by God more than the knownness that we crave from a husband, you know, we're fine. And I was like, that is it. Because again, back to knownness, like it's a good desire. Again, like you crave that, but man, like what would it look like to walk firmly and solidly in that identity of just being known by God and letting that be enough?
Yeah.
And I say that saying it's harder, because it's not as tangible, and it's not as like, you know, God's not audible all the time, right? Yeah, so it's different, but I think that's part of the journey. I don't know. And that's kind of what I'm walking through right now, is like, Lord, how can you be enough?
Yeah.
You know? And I like taking a breath, because I'm like, it's hard. Yeah. If it's really, really hard.
One of the things that I was convicted of, or for a lot of my life, I just really thought of Jesus as just fundamentally like asexual. Like he just, you know, floated around, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And if it's true that he was indeed single, and if it's true he is the incarnation, then he lived a life that was not less.
Yes.
And that is so convicting and so worth pondering. Does it mean? What does it mean? So he's the new way to be human, if he's the example, then there must not be a diminished reality for people who are single.
Exactly.
It must be. And so I'm not saying it's easy. I'm certainly not saying, but there's something else going on there.
It's so true.
And the messages from our culture are the opposite. They just really are.
I know.
And it's really damaging, I think, frankly.
Right. Yeah. So. No, you're so right. I've heard this said by several pastors, this notion of you do not need to express your sexuality to live a fulfilled life. Like sexual expression does not equal true fulfillment, true wholeness in this world, which to your point, yeah, Jesus, yeah. Hello.
Right.
Yeah. So I'm like, that's really stuck with me, where I'm like, yeah, how can, and it, I guess it goes back to also our faith being so upside down and countercultural.
100%.
Because it's almost like this like basic human need in the world. Like, of course you have to.
Yeah.
Like how, you know, even in the world, it's almost like, how dare you not live with or have sex prior to marriage? You have to test try to know, you know? So this sense of like waiting or even maybe never doing it, you know, like how does that equal fulfillment? But then again, it's like our faith is so upside down.
Right.
But yeah. I love that you use the word pondering. It is worth pondering, contemplating.
Yeah. I also wonder this, what messages that does society, but maybe even especially the Bay Area, send that you think are especially destructive for single folks or have been destructive for you? Cause it's been a while since I've been in that world. I don't live in that world. I wonder what messages are sent. I have a sense of them maybe, but
do you mean in the church or in the world?
No. Well, okay. Either.
Yeah. I know. I mean, the one we touched on in the sermon, which is the number one, I think it's just like the sense of like the mixed message again of like, just wait and trust God and it'll happen when you least expect it, or you're not doing enough. And like, and I've heard so much people like make this, and I go back and forth if like, I'm like, how true is this? But people say like, the same way a job won't drop on your doorstep, your husband or your wife won't drop on your doorstep, so you have to go try. Which yes, okay, yes, I can't be home expecting my husband, of course.
Right.
But then there's also, but then the tension of like, but then trusting.
So this is
God.
All on me?
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. I have and to pound the pavement these, like cold yes. calls?
And then I hear so many of my friends' stories where it's just like, yeah, we just met in youth group. Yeah. Or, you know, like, yeah, my husband came up to me in a bar and just gave me his number, where I'm like, so he does do that. The Lord does do those divine appointments. Okay. But then you're telling me to do more. Then you bring into the whole mix of online dating and apps. And it's like, and Dave, I'll be honest with you, like to me, and I know many people have gotten married over the apps, which like that's awesome. And I'm still committed to trying. But after a decade of trying, for me, I've noticed my heart posture when I'm swiping. This is very vulnerable, but sometimes in the swiping, it just feels like at the pit, it's like desperation. Like it's just like, I'm just swiping oh my God, I hope I find him. Let me make sure I don't swipe no on the right. You know, and it's super superficial.
Thanks for sharing that. Yeah,
I'm just like looking at someone's photo, right? Yeah. And like I'm looking at a few prompts. Like that feels judgy too, which I know many of a good friend that it's worked for, and I love that.
Yeah.
And if that's my story, awesome. But I know in my heart posture, there's this sense of like, oh my gosh, it's kind of like a running out of time and desperation. And I hate that.
Those are not postures of faith. No, those are postures of fear and scarcity.
Yes. Thank you. That's the word I'm looking for.
And it's, and it does something in your soul and you know it. And it's not a life of faith or trust or.
No. Yeah. And so, to anyone listening that feels that, I guess I would also give you the freedom to know you don't have to do that either. Like maybe there are other ways. Like, I don't know. Like I would also say like, be a part of a church body, join a small group.
Yeah.
I love that Westgate has like singles ministry for multiple ages. Join those communities. Yeah. Also, like, it's funny, my mom always says this and I've always stuck out to me. It sounds so simple, but she's like, Nassim, when you're out and about, even at like Trader Joe's, keep your eyes up. And I think honestly, like we're in such a culture, I'm calling myself out. I'm on my phone in line at the checkout. I don't want to make eye contact. Like, you know, I'm in my, I'm in sweats and I don't care to like, you know, and like I can get introvert in those moments, but I love her advice of like, just keep an eye out. You never know who you're going to see or meet, even like in a Starbucks or when you're working from coffee shop, right? That's some advice I'd have. Just keep an eye out. I'm working on that. You know, that takes a little bit of confidence too. You know, I think I can get insecure about that too. I'm like, I don't know if I'm like, I mean, anyways, that's a tangent. I'll save that for another. Never mind.
Well, thanks so much for serving our whole church, but especially the singles population, but especially our whole church. Cause you really blessed us with your, first of all, your teaching skill, but also just the points. They're super applicable, I think, for everyone. So super grateful for you. Best of luck in Portland.
I'm so excited too. It's a gift. Thank you guys for doing this series.
Thank you
for spotlighting singles too.
Well, Nassim, thank you so much for being here.
Honored.
And we will talk to you soon.
Yes, talk to you soon. Thanks, Dave.
Bye. Just want to say thanks to Nassim for stopping by. It was such a joy to talk to you. Next week is our final week in the Wonderfully Made series, so Jay, Kim, and I will be here for some final thoughts on this topic before we jump into our new sermon series on Philippians. We're going to be here next week for our final week of Wonderfully Made, so don't miss it, and we'll see you next week.